Is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, September 1st, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home office in New York. And Taylor, in your lifetime, what was a prominent moment when you apologized? Because we certainly saw some of that yesterday. What was your biggest apology of your life?
Oh my gosh. I probably have apologized to my wife about many things throughout the years. One time in my senior week after high school, I inadvertently, I know this is going to sound dumb without the explanation, but kind of trashed an apartment that might have belonged to a friend of my father's at Ocean City. And he might have kicked the door in when I was sleeping and got in my face and yelled at me. So I had to apologize and put in some hard labor hours to make up for that one.
Man. That is significant. Might have. I like that word might have, because you sound a little bit like the apologies we heard yesterday from Francisco Lindor and Javier Baez before the Mets game and what would turn out to be a great day for the Mets. Here's Francisco Lindor addressing the thumbs down gesture that they had been making.
It was wrong, and I apologize to whoever I offended. It was not my intent to offend people. It can't go against the fans. I've never done it in my career. We play for the fans, like Javi said. Javi said we play for the fans, and he's 100% right. For our teammates, for the front office, for our families, for the city. So with that being said, like I said, I apologize. And he didn't look good on our part.
He was surrounded by a horseshoe of reporters when he had that conversation. So was Javier Baez.
I didn't mean to offend anybody. This is something that I've done in the past against the other team. I did it in LA to the dugout. It's not like I might say something wrong about I was booing the fans, and I really meant to boo me now, and not to the fans, to our dugout, because I done it with the other team against other teams, but like I've never seen it. The same fans, and I didn't say the fans are bad. Like, I love the fans, but like I just felt like we were alone. Like the fans obviously wants to win, and like they pay our salary, like everybody says, but like we want to win too. Like, and the frustration got to us.
So both guys had to talk, and they did, and they got and they moved past that and into a day in which the Mets would play two games. First was the resumption of a game that had been suspended because of rain early this season. And Javier Baez was not in the initial lineup, in the game for the in the lineup for the first game, because he wasn't in the lineup when this game began back earlier in the year. He was introduced as a pinch hitter in the bottom of the eighth inning with the Mets trailing 5-1.
They get a force play, and now here's Baez.
Yeah, that's right. He got booed in that first plate appearance. That was Gary Cohen on SNY. Well, that all changed in the bottom of the ninth inning when the Mets rallied. Michael Conforto, as described on SNY, at the plate, Javier Baez at second base. Give a listen.
And Conforto slashes one the other way. Base hit! That ties the game! Alonso in! Baez digging for third. It's kicked by Alfaro. Here comes Baez trying to score! He scores! And the Mets win it! Turn those thumbs around! Javi Baez races home with a winning run! And the Mets win it 6-5!
Yep, classic Javier Baez. He started second. He started first base on that play. He scores the winning run, goes across home plate. The crowd goes crazy. The only thing it was not good about it was that Javier Baez lost a piece of jewelry, which the groundskeeper looked for 20 minutes without success. That was game one of that doubleheader yesterday. In game two, Michael Conforto had another moment.
That's driven in the air. That's deep to right field. That ball is long gone. Into the Coca-Cola corner, and it got out in a hurry. Michael Conforto rips a two-run homer.
That from WCBS. The Mets win the second game as well, so it turned out to be a great day for them in the National League standings. The San Diego Padres going for a wild card spot in the National League, and Blake Snell was outstanding.
2-2 pitch, swing and a miss, strike three. He went with the fastball upstairs at 96 miles an hour. Christian Walker cannot catch up to it. 10th strikeout of the evening for Blake Snell, and two down here in the seventh.
Yeah, and he would have to come out after the seventh inning because his pitch count was up to 107. The Padres go on and win this game. The Giants and the Brewers, and Christian Yelich had a hand in the Brewers' 6-2 win.
Cueto comes set the pitch, and Omar, a high fly, shallow left. Dickerson racing in, and he didn't break on it in time. It's going to get down between him and Bryant. Yelich is around third. He's going to score. Now Narvaez hustling back to first, and the throw to first goes into foul territory up the right field line, and Narvaez is going to end up at second base. What a circus from the Giants defensively on that one.
So the Giants have seen their lead shrink in the National League West. As they were playing, the Dodgers were playing host to the Atlanta Braves, and Mookie Betts had a great moment.
Nothing-nothing game, second inning. Up comes Travis d'Arnaud, who swings at the first pitch, drives a fly ball to deep right. Betts is running back onto the track to the corner to get it. Mookie takes it away. Two gone.
That impact is not something that the Dodgers would like, and you know Mookie would not like. And I think he gets the right hip against the wall. Hopefully his elbow took most of the impact, but wow, very nice route, good timing. Thank you, Dodger fans, for not getting in the way.
That from Joe Davis, Oral Hershiser, on the Dodgers television network. The Dodgers win that game. There was a scary moment when the Braves' Ozzie Albies fouled a ball off his knee. He was carried off the field. But after the game, Braves manager Brian Snitker indicated this is a day-to-day situation. In the American League wildcard chase, in the midst of the Red Sox game in Tampa, Xander Bogaerts had to be taken off the field after testing positive for COVID-19. This is just the latest coronavirus setback for the team. During the course of the game, Wander Franco extended a meaningful milestone.
The 1-1 pitch. Breaking ball, line to right. That's going to get down for a base hit. Kiermaier scores. Renfro's got a good arm, so they'll stop Mejia. The throw comes in and then gets away. Rolls toward the dugout. Mejia's going to try and score, and he will. And the other runners will advance 90 feet. And the Rays score a couple on the base hit by Wander Franco. And it's 3-1 Rays.
And the Rays would go on to win this game 8-5. That sound from 620 WDAE. The Athletics and the Tigers. Matt Chapman got a big hit.
And he swings at the first pitch and a drive. Deep left center field. Way back. Gone. Home run. Into the seats over the bullpens in left center field. Matt Chapman, home run number 22. And the A's take a 3-1 lead.
On their way to a 9-3 victory. That from A's cast. In Anaheim, the Angels against the Yankees. And the Angels pulled off a double steal.
Swing and a miss and breaking for second and getting there in time, and then breaking for the plate is Ohtani, and he's safe, and the Angels just execute a double steal. Angels have been running like crazy the last two innings. That was a delayed double steal right there. The Angels manufacture a run and have a 6-2 lead.
So the Rays win, the Red Sox and the Yankees lose, the A's win as well. The Toronto Blue Jays lost the Baltimore Orioles, and before their game, they announced that they cut left-hander Brad Hand, the veteran reliever. This is just 1 month after acquiring him before the trade deadline. The Houston Astros play Zach Greinke, Taylor Jones on the injured list, citing COVID-19 protocols. Before we move on, college football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper. The one fans deserve.
All right, Buster, and a couple things to mention. First of all, don't forget, for ESPN Plus subscribers, you can join an ESPN Plus fantasy football league now for a chance to win $250,000. Sweepstakes is U.S. only, 18 or older. No purchase necessary. Visit ESPN.com/ESPN Plus football rules for full details and official rules. And I've been banging the drum all week. Today on the ESPN College Football Podcast, you've got Kevin Nagandy taking the reins with Booger McFarland. They're going to preview all of the games on ABC and ESPN this weekend. Then tomorrow, Kevin will talk to Joey Galloway and they're going to make some picks. And we're going to do a segment where we call in an ESPN.com reporter to empty their notebooks, give us the lay of the land before we head into college football weekend. Check out the ESPN College Football Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkson.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkson, who covers baseball for ESPN, and Tim, you and I are going to talk about what happened in Queens yesterday, the roller coaster of events. But there's another situation that might have a major bearing on what we see in October. Xander Bogaerts getting called off the field after he went out to play his position by manager Alex Cora after Xander Bogaerts tested positive. That means he's going to be out at least 10 days. How big of a blow is this for the Red Sox?
Well, it's an enormous blow because they've lost 20 of their last 33 games. They have played poorly for a month and a half, and he's either their best or their second best player. And defensively, he's terrific. And they don't have another shortstop, even though Kike Hernandez obviously can play there if needed. The Red Sox are in trouble. There's no way around that. The A's are charging again, and losing Bogaerts to go with a bullpen that's been more than iffy and a rotation that's been iffy other than Chris Sale. I just don't get it, Buster. There are too many positive tests on that team, too many unvaccinated players, and their COVID list is way too long. This should not be happening to a major league team that is trying to make it to the playoffs. Somebody's got to do a better job of handling this. Am I wrong about that?
No. And they're one of the small handful of teams that have not reached the 85% threshold so they can go under different protocol. It really jumped out of me the last two nights to look at Alex Cora in the dugout, who I know is vaccinated because we've had that conversation, and to see him with a mask on, and he's talking with his own players, you know, a couple feet away, and he's wearing that mask, and now he's pulling his best player off the field. Look, you and I know that Shohei Ohtani is going to wind up winning the American League MVP this year. But I think that if you were to sort of shift the question of, okay, who's the most important guy to his team? Xander Bogaerts might be in the top three or four in baseball in terms of his importance to the Red Sox. What do you think?
Yeah, and Alex has told me all year that Xander's the best shortstop in baseball. And again, a bunch of guys have had injuries. We understand that, and it's certainly a debatable point. But that guy shows up every day. He hits for power. He gets on base. He's a great defensive shortstop. He's a born leader. And 10 days without him, with trying to catch the Yankees for the first wild card, trying to stave off the A's, they're in a difficult spot, and they shouldn't be given where they were, say, 6 weeks ago.
No, and I think this year there's been a lot of folks in baseball who've been polite about different players having choices not to be vaccinated. Tim, I think next year that's going to go away. I think the teams are going to be much more aggressive. And look, they have to work within the confines of the law, But I think that I think they're going to be people more outspoken because of outbreaks like this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Look, Buster, I'm vaccinated, but if somebody has a reason not to be vaccinated, I'm going to fully support that. But this is a team now, and you're around guys every single day, and you are affecting your team in some cases if you're not vaccinated. And now the Red Sox are in trouble in part because of this. So yes, I think more rules are going to have to come forward so we don't have six guys on a COVID list for a team that is going down the stretch run with a month to go.
Okay. A potentially important situation, I feel like, was completely overshadowed by what happened with the Red Sox and what happened with Javier Baez and Francisco Lindor yesterday. The Chicago White Sox are running away with the American League Central. But yesterday, they placed Lance Lynn, who's their ace and a Cy Young Award winner, on the injured list with right knee inflammation. And then during Lucas Giolito's start last night, you see him at some point, he gets injured. He had his left hamstring affected. His leg looked like it buckled underneath him a little bit. He's going to be reevaluated today. I thought September, Tim, was going to be all about resting guys for the White Sox. Now there's a major concern in the rotation. Yes.
Yes, Lance Lynn has been a Cy Young contender all season. He might not be the Cy Young winner if it ended today, but he'd be right there. Lucas Giolito would be in the playoff rotation if the season ended today. Carlos Rodon is coming back from an injury, and he hasn't, you know, he's got some work to do to get back to be the Cy Young contender that he was even a month ago. Dylan Cease has remarkable stuff. Nobody can hit that guy when he's right, but is he ready to be a frontline starter in their in the playoff rotation? And is, you know, do they have the great starting pitching that they had a month and a half ago? But it all starts with Lance Lynn, who's pitched in the postseason before. He would have been, at least for me, their number one starter to start game one of any postseason series. And now we're not sure about that. He's a big guy with a knee injury that worries you a little bit.
Yeah, and I'd say this too. And look, the White Sox are not going to be completely transparent. They're not required to be completely transparent about Lance Lynn's situation. I would say this. My initial thought when I saw it was, you know what? They're just sort of getting him rested as they need to leading up the postseason. Giolito's thing looks much more serious to me.
Yeah. And again, Giolito has swing and miss stuff. He is fearless. He is a postseason pitcher, even though we haven't seen much of that. And they really need him. And if he's hurt, and let's hope he's not, that changes the American League. Because Buster, the Rays are really, really good. Yep. The Astros can beat you in any series with the way they swing the bats. The Yankees are a dangerous team if they get this thing going like they did for 13 straight games. So the White Sox are really up against it. They're not going to be the team to beat going in. The Rays are, and they need to be at 100% capacity if they're going to beat Tampa Bay, the Yankees, and maybe Houston in the postseason.
All right, what a day in Queens yesterday. Let's take it piece by piece. What did you think of the quote-unquote apologies from Javier Baez and Francisco Lindor?
Well, they needed to come. I don't think they were as genuine and sincere as they could have been and should have been. If I had gotten myself in trouble like that with the fans, when my team is in the middle of potentially an epic collapse here to go from four games ahead to four games under 500 in about a 1 month stretch, I would have never said what they did, obviously. And then I would have gotten on my knees and apologized to anyone who cared to listen. I'm just not sure I heard that level yesterday.
You and I grew up in an era in which they had a thing called diagramming sentences, right?
Right.
and I was listening to them talk yesterday. And look, I give them credit because they went out and they did what they needed to do. Let's start with that. Like they needed in New York to go out and speak with reporters and be available. And so in that regard, they were accountable. But I think if you were to try to define a consistent strain of thought in the sentences that they were uttering, you would struggle. But they needed to talk, and they talked in front of cameras. And at some point, both of them, I think, used the word I'm sorry. So they checked the box. Yes.
Yes, they checked the box. They tried. If they hadn't tried, if they hadn't got in front of a camera, if they hadn't been accountable on any level, they would continue to get bashed, and they should. But all right, let's see where they go from here. And then miraculously, they won a game yesterday when they had never won a game down by four runs in the ninth inning at Citi Field. They were 0-2-14. So who knows? Stranger things have happened, Buster. I'm not suggesting they're going to come back now, win the division, or make the playoffs. But we've seen this. We've covered for a long time. And somehow, sometimes something really bad can galvanize a team and get them going in the right direction. For one day, that seemed to happen yesterday.
Absolutely. And on the, you know, that game-winning play, first off, you get Michael Conforto, who has had a terrible year, and he's looked terrible in that game, and he winds up spraying a ball to left field, gets a hit. And on that play, like all the greatness of Javier Baez, the great things that he does, those were on display. Like the instincts, when the ball is fumbled in left field, and third base coach Gary DeSarcina looked uncertain about what he was going to do. He pointed at third base. Baez blows through the stop sign because he saw the fumble in left field. He's like, I'm going to score. And he comes up with a beautiful slide. And you're like, oh, the baseball gods are here. Yes?
Buster, a handful, three guys in the major leagues can score on that play because it doesn't just take speed. It takes courage, but mostly it takes instincts. And you can say whatever you want about Javi Baez. He understands how to play this game way, way better than the majority of players. He makes his share of mistakes when he either doesn't run out a ground ball or he's too aggressive because he thinks he can do anything out there. But that was a remarkable dash to the plate, and not many guys could have done that.
I talked with someone yesterday who's known Baez a long time. He said, look, I don't think Baez is going to be bothered by the boos. And he got booed when he stepped in the box yesterday. This person said he's not going to be bothered by any of that. He's going to go and play his game. His theory was is that Baez was bothered that his friend Francisco Lindor was not thrilled with how he's being booed. Does that make sense to you? Because it did to me.
Yeah, he's standing up for his countrymen, and I really like that. But you still can't take on the fans. You still can't. And, right, you know, Francisco Lindor is hitting 235 after just signing that contract. He has to be a little more accountable here and not take part in this. I would keep everything to myself at this point. And just hope that we make the playoffs. And if they don't, then you start fresh next year.
All right. Last one. Another sign that the baseball gods were in play yesterday. The game between the Houston Astros and Seattle Mariners. Bases loaded. Game on the line. And who's at the plate? Abraham Toro. And he's facing Kendall Graveman, who he's traded for in a controversial deal before the deadline. And this is what happened, Tim.
The 2-2 to Toro, swung on and belted deep to right center field. This one going back. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. It is grand salami time. Abraham Toro with a grand slam here in the bottom of the eighth inning. And he finds the hit the Mariners have been searching for with men on base. And he clears the bases.
How cool was that, Tim?
Well, the symmetry of baseball, Buster, is what I love so much. This is why I do the Quirk Gins every month now, because so many of these weird things happen literally on a daily basis. There's just no way that Toro can be traded for Graveman and then come back, you know, a month later and hit a grand slam off of him to win a game. But it's perfectly normal in baseball for these weird things to happen. It's the ultimate beauty of the game. These odd coincidences and these symmetrical plays that happen, you just shake your head and say, no, that can't happen. But it does in baseball all the time. Needless to say, the Mariners really needed a grand slam in that spot. So it was beautiful. And that's why, again, we cover the game because it never, never lets us down.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
All right, Buster, see you soon. Take care.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price.
go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo. Paul Imbecate is a researcher at ESPN who has told us he's a head honcho on the show Get Up. We actually had your boss on the show yesterday. He didn't sound familiar with your work, Hembo.
No. he's not. Pete avoids me at all costs, which is what makes him such a smart man and so good at his job. My favorite part of the podcast yesterday, though, was the conversation that you had with our friend Sarah Langs about booing. And it doesn't surprise me that Sarah is not one who boos or has booed. But like, as someone who is from Philly, like the notion that booing is wrong or somehow frowned upon to me is like almost outside the Overton window. Like Bob Uecker tells this legendary story about Philadelphia. He played there for a year or two, in which a fan like tumbles over the rail, falls from one level to the next. And that fan was booed, Buster, because he survived. All right, this is where I came from. So the idea that these players are going to be sensitive to a few boos in New York, is they miss me on that.
All right. In my conversation with Pete McConville and also Jessica Mendoza and Sarah, I mentioned I really think the players, it would be good for everybody to understand it's not personal. Did you agree with that point?
100%. And I would further it by saying, if you're a player on a baseball team and you strike out, you should want the fans to boo you because that means they care. And if they care, they're there. And if they're there, they're probably watching from home when they're not. That's what you want. That the investment is what you want. You can't have your cake and eat it too. What you want is a passionate fan base because those are the fan bases that care the most and that are ultimately going to lie in your pockets. So I totally agree. It's not personal. And in fact, I would go as far as to say, this shouldn't surprise you given that I come from Philly, but I view booing as a sign of flattery more often than not.
Right. As Reggie Jackson famously said, they don't boo nobodies.
That's exactly right.
Because the players the fans care for sure. Javier Baez had a bad day on Sunday with what he said. He had a good day yesterday. I felt like I don't know if he believed anything he said before the game, but he did what he needed to do. And then during the day, besides the fact that he lost a piece of jewelry, it was a great day for him. Moving forward, you know, there is that question about what his contract and free agency is going to look like. In the spring of 2020, the Cubs made an offer just below, from what I understand, $180 million. Then the pandemic hit. That offer went away. I guess the open question going into free agency this year, will it get anything close to that? What's your assessment of what teams might offer Javier Baez?
All right, I'm going to take an educated guess, and that guess is going to be 5 years, $20 million per year. So 5 for 100, I think, is going to be the winning bid for Javi Baez. That sort of lines up with what Fangraphs tells us his value has been since he became a full-time starter in 2016. They estimate he's been worth about $22 million a year. But my personal opinion is that he's not worth anything close to that because he's just not that good of a hitter. He's just not. That's the best kept secret in baseball for some reason. He does all sorts of great things on the baseball field, and he did several of them on the very last play yesterday. He does play winning baseball. But I'm not giving a nine-figure contract to Buster, someone who owns the worst strikeout-to-walk rate of any qualified hitter in the history of Major League Baseball. He doesn't have old man skills. What matters as you age in baseball is, can you control the strike zone? Javi Baez can't do that, and thus I would not be willing to make any sort of long-term investment on him.
I have come to believe in thinking about this over the last 72 hours that all of this is going to push him back to the Chicago Cubs, because I believe that he's worth more to the Cubs than any other organization, much in the same way that Derek Jeter was worth. And I'm not comparing the two players, only the situation. Derek Jeter is worth more to the Yankees than any other team because of the legacy. You know, David Ortiz, who was always paid far and above other designated hitters, is always going to be worth more to the Red Sox than any other team because of the legacy. So I'm thinking, you know, and if you're the Cubs, And previously, you had an offer on the table just under $180 million. It's kind of a complicated negotiation because now you check in with him on an offer. You don't want to embarrass him, right? And say, well, you know what? I know last 2 years didn't go so well. How about $75 million after, you know, $100 million less, which is why, as I thought about this, I think for the Cubs, knowing his value to that franchise, the way the fan base loves him after he was traded, I think the sweet spot is about $125 million. You know, relative to what you're talking about right now about what his actual player value is. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I also do agree with you in that he has more value to that organization than any other. The question is, why would they pay 125 if no other team is going to approach 100? I don't know that. I don't know if there's going to be another club out there. But Major League Baseball executives, you said many times, act unemotionally. They're like me. They look at the back of the baseball card and they see those ugly strikeout and walk totals. All the other stuff he does adds value, but those things depreciate over time. He does not have old man skills. The Cubs right now are in a rebuild. So they can get away with him on basing 280 in a season and bringing fans into the ballpark and being a relic of the 2016 team. That makes sense. But for most any other team that wants to win, it doesn't.
I would agree with you. I would say this, a non-emotional part of the Cubs equation when they decide what to offer Baez in the offseason is that if they re-sign him for big money, then the conversation about the Ricketts family being cheap in their ownership of the Cubs is muted to a large degree. You see what I'm saying? So I think there's actually value for the Cubs front office for ownership to go and re-sign Javi Baez. That makes sense?
It does. But I will say this. Javi Baez won't be a key member of the next good Cubs team. I think he'll be there for the bridge, but I don't think he'll get all the way to the other side.
Okay. I think they're going to re-sign him. I think that's all that's going to push him back there. All right. Tell me about the best organization in sports.
Buster, the Tampa Bay Rays are the best organization in sports, and I can prove it definitively. Their big league club owns the best record in baseball. They're tied with the Giants right now for the best record in baseball. Their AAA club in Durham owns the best record at that level. Their high A club in Bowling Green owns the best record at that level. Their low A club in Charleston owns the best record at that level. And their rookie league club in the Florida Complex owns the best record in that league. Buster, the Rays and their affiliates own the best record in their league in five of the top six levels of professional baseball. Their player development machine is the most impressive thing happening in professional sports right now for my money. What say you?
As you were going through that, I was thinking, you know what? The Rays dominate player development the way Taylor dominates drinking, right? I mean, just has it covered at all levels, right, Taylor?
Oh, hell yeah. I love that comp. Thank you, Buster. What a nice thing to say.
And by the way, Taylor, I did get an angry tweet that we were talking up your drinking on the podcast.
Glorifying alcoholism. Yeah, Yeah, that's okay. It's my own problem. We're not encouraging anyone else to participate. Just me.
Well, and what I was going to say, and now that we've established that you're the Tampa Bay Rays of alcohol, we're good to go. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got exactly, the baseball Taylor, tie-in.
Taylor, from what I understand, you're highly efficient and also very poor. So it's perfect. It works both ways.
You dominate all matchups. That's what we've heard, right? About the Rays and about you. All right. Give me some context for the weekend rivalry that we're going to see between the Dodgers and Giants. First place at stake in the National League West. We've got these two teams on Sunday Night Baseball.
So the Giants own the best record in the National League. The Dodgers own the second best record in the National League. It has been a while since we have been able to say that. Buster, you grew up rooting for the Dodgers. Do I have that right?
Yes, 100%.
Around in what year?
Became a fan of the Dodgers in 1972.
Last time the Dodgers and the Giants, in either order, owned the two best records in the National League over a season was 1966. They also did that in 1965. 66 was Sandy Koufax's last season, probably the greatest final act in baseball history. That was a year in which Willie McCovey and Willie Mays both hit 35 homers for the Giants. And you'll also recall that rivalry at that time was incredibly heated. 1965 was the year of the famous brawl with Juan Marichal and John Roseboro. Like, that's the sort of the zenith, if you will, of that rivalry, at least since they moved from New York. That's how good these teams are right now at the same time. And it's been more than 50 years since we've been able to say that.
You were talking up strength of schedule, and you and I in the past have had many strength of schedule notes. In some cases, it hasn't paid off down the stretch, notably for your Phillies in terms of taking advantage. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking last night, boy, there's a special kind of pressure these days when you play the Baltimore Orioles because they're so bad. What do you got in strength of schedule notes as we come down the stretch?
Two things. First, as it relates to the Orioles, if you just exclude all games, if you exclude all games against the Orioles, the Rays are only up two games in the win column over the Yankees. So it goes to show you, if you go 18-1 against any team, it gives you a huge advantage. So beat the teams you're supposed to beat. The second note, as it relates to the second wild card in the National League, the Padres, Buster, own the most difficult remaining schedule in Major League Baseball. 29 total games, 10 against San Francisco, and 6 against the Dodgers, all in L.A. Ridiculous. The Reds own the second easiest remaining schedule in Major League Baseball. 29 total games, 9 of them are against the aforementioned Pittsburgh Pirates. So, if you look at those numbers and just on the surface, you will conclude that the Reds are going to make the playoffs and the Padres are not. Now, obviously, they're teams that we view as somewhat different in terms of the quality of the rosters, but that is such a chasm in the schedule over the last month of the season that I think if you're going to go ahead and project this thing out, I would take the Reds right now based upon that and nothing else.
In a couple weeks, I think we might actually have the Reds on Sunday Night Baseball. I know that's under discussion as an option in the game actually against the Dodgers. So, I would agree with you about how this is going to wind up. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. We just have one for today from our pal Ja Tai Joe at Ja Tai Joe 87. Ja writes in, I have two unrelated questions. First, why do you hate the Rays? Second, do you ever get tired of people asking why you hate their team right after you spend a significant portion of the podcast talking about how good they are? As I said, very unrelated questions. And I'll add to that, why do the Rays fans hate their team? Because they have a massive series against the Red Sox right now, and there must be 4,000 people at the Trop. It's pretty depressing to watch.
I to answer the question, I got to say, it does get kind of tiresome because, you know, implicit when people come at you and say, you know, why do you hate the, you know, this group, is that feeling that implicit in that is the suggestion that you are not going to look at thing, you know, even handedly. And, you know, Taylor, you and I've been doing this show now together for 2 years. I don't care who wins. I truly don't. I just love good stories.
Right.
You know, like when the Orioles were losing games and we talked about how bad they were, you know, that was all, you know, deserved. And then when they broke the losing streak, we made it the top of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I truly don't care who wins. You know, we mentioned when we were talking to Hembo that I was a Dodger fan growing up. It was amazing to me as a crazy fan, you know, someone who rooted like nutso for the Dodgers. I told the story on my senior yearbook picture is of me with a Dodgers cap. But when I started covering professional baseball in 1989, it just goes away. Mm-hmm. Like, because then you just begin to look at everything through the portal of, okay, what's good or bad for an individual franchise, you know, with the decisions and the things that are happening for that team. It's not that hard.
All right, there you have it. Buster doesn't hate your favorite team, although he might. He might. We'll
continue. Oh my gosh.
He definitely doesn't hate the Rays.
It hurts for you to say that. Oh, geez.
Sorry, Buster. We'll get back at it again tomorrow. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to work on every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.